You're listening to the Decentered Media podcast with me, Rob Watson. Conversations about community media. Visit decentered.co.uk or follow on Instagram and Twitter at Decentered Media.
It's Wednesday the 6th of December. It's day 12 of the 16 days of activism for the Parallel Lives Network, and it's also day 3 for our 5-day exhibition down here in the basement gallery at Leicester Adult Education Centre called Doc Photo 8.
And you are?
My name is John Costa. Thank you for the opportunity to talk to you again, Rob. Seems like a long time.
It is a long time. We haven't had a chat for ages. So we're sitting here having a cup of coffee together, and people are coming in and out, just trying to kind of describe the area. We're in the Leicester Adult Education Centre.
Yeah, so it's the former library, which is now the Leicester Adult Education Centre. For people that are Leicester-centric, it's just on the corner of Beaver Street and Wellington Street, opposite the former Phoenix. So it's the former library opposite the former Phoenix, or the Leicester Adult Education Centre opposite the Gresham, the hotel. Because it's listed, it's been very difficult over the years for them to do anything to it. So I think it was great that they'd made the decision to sort of, you know, whiteboard out the basement. And this gallery is available for anybody to use for free if you're doing anything community orientated. So we've got 8 community-based documentary photographers down here. But if you want it on a commercial basis, you can still book it, and you either do 10% of your sales, anything that you sell, or you can do some free courses or sessions or, you know, that kind of stuff, talks, as a way of mitigating that. So from that point of view, I think adult education have been quite visionary in being able to use the space.
And it's great to see it being used as that hub, kind of, you know, the courses that are going on, the cafe upstairs, the language classes. It's like taking on a life of its own. I mean, we were here, 10 years ago, and it was, you know, that period where it had just been changed over from being a library to part of the Adult Education Centre, and that kind of whole trying to get something started. It went through various ups and downs and phases and different people being involved, and
absolutely,
it's kind of clicking now, I think.
Yeah, I mean, and of course it's like anything, isn't it? You know, when we all live in a society which is about a quick fix, or, you know, what can we do to solve this or make that happen, everyone expects a really quick thing to happen, and, you know, for it to work and be significant. You know, and we've seen that with our cultural quarter here. You know, even now we're still having to educate people about what the cultural quarter is, maybe what it's for and who it's for, you know, who's worthy to attend. And I think what you got with this building, I can remember when Chris Minter was the head of adult education then, and, you know, he said, look, you know, John, I want to do some visionary stuff, you know, what can we do? And we built where the cafe is now, which is called the old library cafe, which is great. That's a nod to the building's former use as our central lending library. We built a little radio booth there, I think, and we had some equipment donated over from Braunston, which we put in there, a little sort of citizen's eye radio back in the day. And then we had a little photo display up on the top floor in the mezzanine in those alcoves up there. And then Ian Davis came along and, you know, pretty much put that ball up and ran with that. And we had the Leicester People's Photographic Gallery, which was great, which a lot of people remember and love. And you know, it's a bit sad that it's gone now. But, you know, these things all change, and they're all part of that lifetime. And I think to finally come into the building now, to be having this exhibition here, to be using the Handsome Hall again, and the alcoves for the Saturday Heritage Fairs, which we'll come on to talk about. But, you know, remembering back to 2017, which was the third military history light that we'd done, 2015, 2016, 2017. It just seems now that the alcoves being branded out, the cafe working, that the building's finally what it should be, which is a centre of, you know, family learning, adult learning, a love of learning, maybe. Very different environment from going into a university, which seems very much about, you know, courses and passing courses and doing this. You know, it's a non-religious space. It's, you know, it's neutral, it's welcoming, and it's open to everyone. And I think from that perspective, when people come in here, they go, oh, I wasn't expecting that.
So tell us about the documentary the photography exhibition. How did it come about? Who's involved? You know, what was it like putting it together? How did it work?
Well, I'll start with the final point that you made there first, which was it was a nightmare. No, all of these things always are. I think what it is, I mean, I remember thinking, wouldn't it be great that when we've got the 16 days of activism, which is the 25th of November to the 10th of December, and like I said, today's day 12, wouldn't it be great at the same time, if it was available, and adults said it was, I could book it, the space for 5 days, and put a photography exhibition on, which was complimentary. So, you know, the Documentary Media Centre, film, photography, audio, new media, great opportunity to talk about documentary photography. I think I initially invited 14 documentary photographers that I know, some of them who have moved overseas and some are overseas, and we ended up about a week ago with six. I wanted eight. Doc photo eight is actually means eight, because someone was asking, is it your eighth doc photo exhibition? I said no, it's eight documentary photographers, and we had six. And Christopher, who's co-curating it with me, said, oh, should we change the name to, like, you know, Doc Photo 6? And I was like, well, you know, let's leave it at 8. It's set now. You know, we've got the logo. We've promoted it. And we've managed to find two more documentary photographers, one who's a former Com Art student of ours, Aidan Reynolds, which is great. He's stepped up to it. And one of the photographers last night, a professional photographer here in the city, said, oh, John, you know, fair play to everybody. Everyone's done really well here, but this lad's got a bit of an eye, like, you know, I might reach out to him. So that's positive. So I said that to Aidan this morning, you know, to sort of pick that one up and run with it. And then the other one was Daryl, who we've got to know over the last couple of weeks through the Veterans Hub here, which I helped to co-host. And, you know, he's a former veteran, just come out of prison. So we've got a shared prison experience with him. And we got chatting away, and we were talking about sort of mental health and resilience and, you know, being outdoors and doing something different. And he went and bought himself a camera and started taking photos. I said, well, listen, you know, there's never a right time to have your first photo exhibition. So if you go off and take some photos and then print them out and put them up, maybe you can be number eight. So I was delighted last night at the official opening viewing, that the eight photographers have all got their work up. You know, it's Doc Photo 8. And all of the response has been, wow, that, what a mix, what an eclectic mix. It's nice to have an exhibition like this down here of heritage related stuff, you know, sort of what I'd call classic street. You know, you've got Paul Vernon's with his whole kind of myriad of grid photography and a little bit of AI as well, sort of nod to the future. You know, Lee, who's not had anything up since 1994, 29 years, and, you know, Daryl's picked up his camera a week ago. So I think for me, it's, you know, getting Coulson from Colours of Leicester finally after all these years of talking to her. I mean, I've had the Doc Media Centre came and gone in 4 years down at Northampton Street, so we've never managed to get her to print them out. And this year, she's got her first exhibition, and, you know, her friends came down, and it was just lovely to see. And Roberta's heritage stuff, and Marta, you know, every Wednesday for 2 years down at Leicester College, getting your degree that way. And you think that takes real commitment. So there's a real mixed bag of people, and I think that's what people were drawn to last night when I got each of the photographers to come up and explain what they do. That was good. And obviously yourself with your own way, unique way of presenting your photographs that you take on two roller banners, and everyone's like, what? I said, that's so cool, you just take your photos with you.
Yeah, put them up anyway. The spontaneity of it though, because I've not been closely involved in planning or anything like that, but it seems like it kind of devised itself and set itself up. Is that fair?
Yeah, I think for me that's what I wanted to do. I mean, I can't, you know, I got Paul, I'm lucky to know Paul Barron, you know, he's a fantastic technician, and kind of engaged him to put it up. So I then have the trust in someone that I know can put an exhibition up and make it work, so I don't have to worry about it. I reached out to Christopher Appley Bennett, who I knew, you know, recently graduated with his master's, went off to the Venice Biennial doing photography. You know, in a year's time, we'll be sitting here now and he'll have his exhibition up, his first, you know, sole curated thing. And I just said to him, well, come and co-create it with me. And his skill set were, like, you know, making some of the labels and doing some of the signage, and he was happy to do that. And so everyone kind of knew what their role was, which is why I called everybody up. You know, when DMU students were here on Monday, literally half hour after we'd opened, 27 of them turned up with our former colleague Joe Strange, you know, doing the photography level 5 course, year 2. And it was just about, well, look, you know, yeah, I came up with the idea, this guy's co-created with me, you know, nothing will happen without this guy hanging it on the wall, and here's some of the photographers. And also I think we thanked Paul Vernon's partner Kelsey, who'd come up from London for the day to help him hang it up to then go back to work. So, you know, it's not just about getting good at photography, it's getting a group of people around you that can make something happen, and that's why it feels natural, I think.
And you know, reflecting back to how things were 10 years ago, it was an effort to get help people to understand what that meant to take part in something like this, whereas this time it's like, you know, that's the difference. You can see the difference between the intervening time, as before you had to explain, this is what it's about. It's not about being professional. It's not about, you know, having a fixed gallery style standard of things, but it's about taking part and about using what you've got and using the assets that you've got and getting it out there. And that seems to, that's remarkably different now, isn't it? You didn't have to put like a, you haven't had to put a competition in, you haven't had to, you know, build up to this and do a lot of inviting people in and, you know, curating it. It's just kind of, it's kind of driven itself.
No, you're right.
What's made the difference?
And of course, everything you just said there is completely right, because I think if we go back to the early days of when, you know, we first knew each other as Citizens Eye, you know, 2008 to 2014, coming up to the 10th anniversary of it closing next year, it's really weird, and people still say they've emailed me on editor@citizenseye.org. I said, well, that's long gone. It's been nearly 9 years that's gone now. So I think a lot of it's to do with permission, and a lot of it's to do with traditional gatekeepers. So as social media, digital media, user-generated content, all that kind of stuff took off in those early days of Citizens Eye, you know, when we were training people in the College of Journalism room at BBC Radio Leicester, you know, how to use Facebook, not just for personal stuff, but pages and groups, and, you know, Vine's gone, you know what I mean? We've got Flickr, Instagram now. We'd have had Instagram then. I think that started in 2014. You know, all these things that have come and gone, and I think what happens is that now people are, with, you know, improved technology on your smartphone, people are able to take a good photograph. At the end of the day, you can take a photograph, but, you know, if you've got the eye, then whether you pick up your smartphone or whether you pick up a traditional camera or you use film, it doesn't matter. It's the fact that, you know, have you got the eye? You know, it's like anything, isn't it? You know, if you've got a sort of an inbuilt talent for it, you can learn stuff, but have you got it naturally? That when you invite people, most of the time, you know, like Daryl, for example, it's that, do I have permission? It's sort of, am I worthy? You know what I mean? You know, I've not been doing it long enough, you know? So to see the look on his face and the response from people from him doing it a week and giving him positive feedback and stuff, rather than critical or negative feedback, the critical feedback is, this is how you could improve. Well, you've got someone over here like Lee, you know, who's, you know, not as old as us, but, you know, has not done anything since 1994. Like I said, 29 years since he's had an exhibition. And he's almost like a kid, you know, feeding off the fact that people are liking his work and stuff. And what do you think? You know, genuinely wants to know. And then Marta, who's seen her work up after spending, you know, 2 years every Wednesday night getting good at it. Clearly she's, you know, she's working and getting the camera equipment and all that. And everyone's on their own. And that's why I'm proud of all of them, because I'm proud of them all for individual reasons, because I know what their journeys are to get to this point. And that comes back to that permission and someone willing to take responsibility for, you know, filling out the health and something. I mean, I've got to do a risk assessment, all that kind of stuff, you know, you put the insurance policy in, all those things. That so if you've got the ability to do that, then don't try and do everything else. Try and find people that you can work with that are kind of looking to build portfolio or, you know, want to get a different experience, try it out and stuff like that. And I think that's, for me, collaborative working and, you know, trying to create this little collective. I think we've got a little collective of people now, including yourself, that, you know, if you put an event on like this for a week, you can have a podcast, you can have a photo walk, you've got a technician to keep on top of it, you've got people that will come in on social media. And you suddenly think, well, why did it look so easy? And you go, well, it's because
it took 10 years to make it look easy.
Yeah, you've done all that stuff that before, and you've made mistakes and it's been hard and no one's turned up and it's the wrong place and then the printing didn't arrive and it fell off the wall and all those things. And what people see is they see the success, but they don't see the hard work that goes into it. Of course, that's the negative side of digital media, because I can click my fingers, you know, and put stuff up on my Instagram, which means, well, why can't I organise an exhibition? Well, there is no reason why you can't. It's just, it's not straightforward. And watching a YouTube 101 or listening to a TED Talk or, you know, Google searching WikiHow to do an exhibition, all that stuff will tell you, but, you know, unless you've got all of those God-given talents, you know, you need other people. And I think we just don't talk about collaboration and building a collective or people that you trust around you enough. It's always about go off and be the best you can be and do this. It's so easy and stuff. Well, it is if you're lucky enough maybe to have money so you don't have to work in a coffee shop to pay your rent and all that kind of stuff.
And another element that kind of comes to mind with it is that it, once it's over, it's over. It will have happened and we'll have a record of it. But there's no, I'm presuming, there's no kind of legacy, follow on. It's like that spontaneity, it's come up and then it's gone. And that's kind of actually adds to the excitement. It's like it's a pop-up exhibition in the sense, but it doesn't have any weight that it needs to carry on and be part of an ongoing process, or you know, a legacy heritage, which we can talk about in a minute. But you know, it doesn't have to have that, anything that goes beyond it, other than it's just in itself.
Absolutely. And I think that's where, for me, I mean, someone said last night, you know, how long's it on for, and I said, oh, Friday. And they said, oh, what, only five days? I was like, yeah. And they said, oh, why isn't it on longer? I said, well, why not? You know what I mean? If it's on, if you're interested, you'll make the time to come and see it. If you can't make the time to come and see it because you're busy, you've got other things on, unlucky. Here it is online. At some point, I'll do a walk around and film it. So we'll have that legacy on YouTube of what it was. We've got this as a legacy of, you know, the conversation, the photos last night that are on Instagram that everybody captured in their own way. That's part of the legacy. And so rather than trying to make it something which is, you know, everybody's got to see, you know what I mean? It's not trying to, you know, I always say to people, is it a DFS sale on the side of a bus for everybody? Or is it a really kind of niche project that people, you know? So start with the people that you know, invite them along. And the next time you participate in a pop-up, you know, whether it's Doc Photo 8 again with 8 photographers, or it's coming to support, you know, Christopher's event next year, it's more about just changing people's perceptions that it is easy to do, yeah, but actually you've just got to put the effort into it. And I think from my perspective, that the legacy is that it's building on the legacy that started in 2008 with Citizen's Eye and is still going forward. And, you know, Saturday Heritage Fairs take that forward. You know, Military History Live takes that forward. You know, next year's the 15th anniversary of the Special Olympics, so we'll do something, a little exhibition down here. I've booked for a week. So I'm just thinking about, it's not about just getting loads of stuff from 2009 and putting it on the wall. It's how can we make it interactive? How can we make it interesting? Actually, how can we put one piece of ephemera or memorabilia in a corner and the whole thing's blank on the Monday and everyone's like, what the living daylights is going on here? So, well, if you don't create it, we're not going to do it. And that makes people think about what that time was for them as a volunteer or a parent or as an athlete. Bring along what you've got. You know, can we scan it? You know, can we do podcasts there and then? Should we do portrait photographs? You know, should we interview people there and take testimony there and then? So rather than trying to spend a year curating it and then putting it for someone to come and see, it's like, well, let's just, I think I booked Thursday the 25th of July. Is exactly 15 years from the opening ceremony that was at the 25th of July, which was at the Walker Stadium, as it was then, the King Power. So I booked Handsome Hall, you know, Assistant Mayor Manju Lasood's up for doing something to mark that. So we'll probably have a little event, we'll invite people down, you know, we'll give some certificates, some sort of memories, watch a few bits and pieces that were made during that time, and just say to people, like, okay, let's go and hang out downstairs. There's a little exhibition here that some of you may recognise and stuff like that. If you've brought anything with you, great. You've got another week, you know, anything you've got, bring it down. You know, me, Rob, blah, blah, blah. We've got a bit of funding. We've made it work. Come down, do a podcast, do that. And so you create something that is of the moment rather than the definitive exhibition. And this is the trouble. People go, I went to that. That told me the whole story. No, it didn't, you know, because the people that weren't there. So that's one narrative. How do we create that other narrative? So I'm constantly challenging myself to think about how we do events and how we can make them more interactive. And, you know, by also not just using the walls like this, by sort of talking to Paul Barron, the technician, how can we start building little installations into things and start thinking about how we engage, you know, also that pop-up version of a museum as opposed to just an exhibition.
So that ties us nicely into the Saturday Heritage Fairs. Mm-hmm. So do you want to tell us a bit about what was the moment when you had the light bulb went on and you thought, right, this is what I need to do?
I had an epiphany. Yeah, I think it was more about the we knew that the building that we had on Northampton Street was coming to a close, and I guess we were thinking about, you know, we've got this one heritage, we've got one network internationally, the Parallel Lives Network. But we've got all of these people that we know locally, and we've been doing a lot of heritage-related stuff. Maybe there's a network there. How do we do that? And we're going to formally launch the network at the third Saturday Heritage Fair on the 10th of February. So we've done two as a way of building it up. How do we want it to look? What kind of engagement are we getting? What kind of point at their heritage project do we want people to be? So it's kind of people at the grassroots, or they've done something, they want to move on to the next thing. So you'll get all the bigger organisations and the statutory organisations that will like it because you're trying to do things that can bring their spaces alive. So I said, well, why don't we just do a couple of these heritage fairs? And the great thing about Kerry Gray here, the head of adult education, is because we've got a good legacy and relationship with her from our three military history lives. It was almost doing military history live, which for anyone of a particular age will understand, because it doesn't matter what age you are, you'll get one of these. It's Blue Peter meets Dorling and Kingsley meets Horrible Histories, and people go, ah. Sometimes they get it. You and I would get all three of those connections. Someone turn around from a particular age and go, oh, Dorling and Kingsley books, yeah, they really kind of changed how you presented history or geography. And other people go, Horrible Histories, loved it. Yeah, totally got the Romans once I'd watched that film or whatever. So I think whatever your age is, you got something out of Military History Live. And what I'm trying to do really with the Saturday Heritage Fair is make it about heritage in its broadest sense. And it's not about defining it from a museum perspective or, you know, what's worthy or, you know, is it Rome? And if it's not this, it's not that. It's about just come along and just talk. So whatever your collection is, then, you know, heritage is because it has some kind of connection to you or memory, family, people, places, events, all that kind of stuff. So how could we put these events on, make them really kind of easy entry for someone that wanted to do an exhibition, you know, easy entry and free for people to come along and attend. And just see what happens. So rather than sort of, you know, we're going to do five, then we're going to make it bigger, and then we're going to do like get sponsorship, and then we're going to do this. It was just, well, let's do the first two and what worked and what didn't work and what could we tweak. And I think the third one in February will look the hall and outside, every alcove being used. And well, using the hall and every alcove outside was, we're back to Military History Live really, how it ended in 2017. So we've got the ability to be able to bring all those things together and those people to play. And the people that had stalls in the first one and the second one will be running the workshops because it's for them, about them, for people interested in what they do, rather than getting statutory organisations to come down and go, how to do your collection, because we're not at that stage yet. It's more about that kind of shared knowledge. And the feedback's been very good. You know, there's a few things that we can tweak and stuff, but normally the things that you can tweak on your feedback about, you know, better signage and all that sort of stuff all comes down to the fact that, you know, it's self-funded, so you've got to put that money in, so we improve like the banners outside and the reach. But you know, people are like, oh, you should be on the radio. Well, you know, we've had an advert twice on Leicester Community Radio, and we've been on Radio Leicester a couple of times. Oh right, okay, I didn't see that. Well, I didn't hear that. Why? Well, because I don't listen to Radio Leicester or Leicester Community Radio. Well, why are you telling me to get on the radio if you wouldn't have heard it anyway? You know, that kind of stuff. So, and then people kind of chuckle, and then you chuckle back, and then they realize that you know that they know what you know that they know, that what they just said doesn't make any sense, because that's what they would do. And they'd be just as surprised as us that maybe someone didn't come down from that. So you just got to keep trying. And, you know, are 5,000 leaflets the answer? Probably not. 500 leaflets with 10 placed in the hands of 50 people that can go out and bring a group of people. So it's getting to those people and getting to work it that way. That's when it becomes effective and when it works. So, you know, it's one of those things. It's never a definitive, that's the answer. It's about, let's just keep it rolling.
Who were the groups that came to the first couple of...
Well, I tried to set out to have a couple of anchor partners that I thought would bring an audience, yeah, or would be of interest to people that were interested in heritage. So first of all, we went to Media Archive of Central England, MACE. There are kind of, you know, approved local archive for film heritage in the Midlands, and said to them, look, you know, we've been talking about this disappearing Midlands project. You've got a bit of funding from BFI to develop it. So it's almost like contemporary collecting, if you like. Anyone that created film footage before smartphones as either already or is waiting to die before they can, their family gives that stuff to MACE. So now it's about, since digital came along, there's not many people that are going forward and saying, well, actually, I've got this film of this being demolished or this cinema, and it was knocked down a week later, like the Evington Cinema, for example, that kind of thing, or before the fire, a week later there was a fire. They just don't think that MACE are interested in that because it's almost like too close, it's contemporary, it's almost like current affairs from that perspective, you know. And this is the big conversation, you know, what's current affairs and when's history and all that kind of stuff. So once you engage people in that, they were like, oh, right, I never thought of it from that perspective. So that was MACE, and we've made a little advert, and we're slowly bringing people in and having conversations. And then what we're looking to do in February is launch Disappearing Midlands formally, with a view that there's going to be one in May, again, Saturday Heritage Fair. Then we're going to try and do a two-day pop-up at the Riverside Festival in Leicester. And then the week later, there's another Saturday Heritage Fair. So we've got these kind of, within the space of 6 weeks, almost like three touch points to get people interested in taking part in contemporary, you know, making of films in there, using their smartphone, of people, places and events where they are, where they live. The other keystone partner was the Leicestershire and Rutland Family History Society, because I know, because they're open couple of times during the week, and they're turning people over that are looking to research family history, and you know, using them to use access to records that normally cost you money, like Ancestry.com and all that sort of stuff, that they would all already be bringing people that will come and see them at the Saturday Heritage Fair, and that's proved to be the case in the last two. And then the other two were Language Cafe with our colleague Carol Cloessy, looking at trying to do something which is focused in the cafe outside, which is about all the various languages that are spoken in Leicestershire. But that's language in its broadest sense, not just the spoken word, but, you know, the language of photographs, you know, the language of sign language with, you know, with Bridget and all like that. And that's worked really well. And then, obviously, yourself with Leicester Stories and what you're doing with the Empton Echo and Leicester Community Radio, you know, Leicester Community Radio 2 with its fantastic archive from the East Midlands Oral History Archive with Colin Hyde. And then also thinking your partnership with DMU, you know. And so it's then about capturing those stories as we go. So everyone had an opportunity to bring an audience to them. And then in there we sprinkled what I would call, you know, the better organised sort of heritage organisations, like the Leicestershire Industrial History Society had a store at the last one. Number two, the first one was the At-Risk War Memorials Project, who we've helped to set up as a registered museum with AIM. So we've set up 7 museums in the last 12 months as small independent museums, 4 virtually and 3 physically. So At-Risk War Memorials, one of those physical ones, because they've got a building. The latest one is the Y Theatre. So we're going on a journey with them over the year. And if you think about how many people over their existence, you know, have either stood in an audience and watched something and have collected the ephemera. Lady was sitting here earlier from Loris, we were talking to, you probably heard it, and she was saying about all the ticket stubs that she's collected. She likes collecting ticket stubs. Has a real problem there going to concerts with e-tickets because she actually wants something to collect. And then all the people that have performed on the stage, you know, of all different ages and stuff. So what a fantastic archive that's already is that you could bring in, and then what's already in the basement. And so those kind of organisations, and then some organisations that had already got some funding for projects that they were looking to do legacy and show, like, you know, Radio 2 Funky with their nightclub project. You've got a project that's live, so, you know, Keith Allett with his whole Tight Raver documentary that they're making. And of course they bring this exciting ephemera along with them as well, that people think, oh god, I remember that, I was there, that's me, look at me, that's my photograph, oh, I'd love to listen to that. So it's really kind of interactive. And then things like, you know, that we did. So we've done our conflict memory and education project. We spoke about, you know, Citizen's Eye. We spoke about the Special Olympics 15th anniversary that's coming up next year that we can kind of get people involved in. And then people at various stages of kind of just developing what they're doing. You know, Zam Zam with her fantastic sort of Somalian culture exhibit that she's done, a little taster for that to make that bigger next time. You know, one of the recent people that you interviewed, you know, Dimple Patel with her Parveen Benz shop, you know, audio postcard experience. And people are just getting to see and touch different kind of projects. You know, the Broughton History Group, they're incredibly passionate and they bring this stuff along. And what was great at the second one, actually, the other week, was Kerry Gray brought in this book, which was the punishment book from a school, which he handed over to Geraldine from Broughton History Group. Of course, she was absolutely delighted, spoke to everybody about it all day. Tina knew, because Tina's from Broughton, she knew some people that were in there. It's quite funny, actually. Didn't ask her if she was in it, but yeah, she knew some people that was in it. Then they said they have the cane. So the Broughton History Group has the cane from the school. They now have the punishment book that goes with it, because obviously all those people in there got the cane. And then Lee, who's got the photographs over here, his partner came and said, well, actually, his mum worked at that school, so he knew all the teachers that were in there. And so suddenly, from this book appearing, you had all these multiple spin-off conversations. And so for me, it's never what's the outcome of a Saturday Heritage Fair. It's like that there was a Saturday Heritage Fair, and don't overanalyze what the outcomes are. Just let them happen, because you'll know whether it's a good event for the stall holders and the visitors, because they kind of, when's the next one? Can I have a stall at that one? I always remember Keith saying after the first one, I thought he'd take a break, and he was like, as long as I'm not getting rid of anyone that wants a stall, like a new person, can I come back again? And I know as a dad, you know what I mean, of a young child, his daughter, you know, that's family time away from him, because he's probably working in the week as a fantastic, well-known local filmmaker. But if he sees the value in it, that's the energy that I draw on. And I think to myself, that's why we need to do it. How can we improve it? How can we make it better? What tweaks can we make to make it more interesting for people and engaging, and then start broadening out how we do the marketing? Because ultimately I like marketing that's got a picture on it of something that I know that I'm going to see. So having two events, we've now got all the photographs done, all the films, we can do a 90-second advert, but we can actually make a flyer that's got information on it rather than a generic, and I hate generic images, and you know, off, because everyone's like, where have I last seen that? You know what I mean? So yeah, that's what drives me really.
So the kind of to encapsulate that, it's not really about things, it's about the stories that it
people, places and events. It's story, yeah. It's storytelling, right back to what you were saying there about that story based, you know, everybody's got a story, you know what I mean, because everyone's got that lived experience. And for me, if the Independent Heritage Network can achieve one thing for its members with the Saturday Heritage Fairs, it's the fact that if you imagine we're sitting here now and we've got a timeline on the wall in a museum or heritage setting of the experiences of the new arrivals from Ireland since World War II in Leicester. Then what happens is that, well, you might be second or third generation Irish in Leicester, born in Leicester, you know, and you've just got your grandfather's and your father's photo archive because they were interested in photography. One of those rare people in the streets living in Belgrave before it became a South Asian community. That had a photograph on the street, so he's got this amazing photograph, but thinks that no one, they certain that the grandfather who may have passed away and the father certainly doesn't think that there's any interest in there to anybody else beyond the family. Well, of course, what happens is when you go to a media archive of Central England Mace event is you'll sit there and watch someone else's photographs and stuff that they've taken in, you know, garden parties or birthday parties and all that. And as soon as you say to someone, have you got any of that? They go, oh yeah, but you wouldn't be interested. So, well, you've just spent 90 minutes watching someone else's. And it's about getting people to realise that it's not about the spectacular. It's not about the famous. It's not about the, you know, big events. It's, you know, that event, that's good. You know, the Silver Jubilee, the Golden Jubilee, you know, the first Pride. I think I've filmed the first Pride in the city on Citizen's Eye YouTube. It's not about the Olympic torch relay or the Paralympics torch relay. It's the mundane. It's the party at home. It's the your reaction to Lady Diana dying. You know, all those kind of things. You know, what kind of impact did it have? Because they're the gaps that we have on timelines that we put on the wall. It's a table of three people that are part of the Independent Heritage Network bringing suitcases, handbags, and I don't know, you know, a box of bits that they tip out on the thing. They're the three bits that bring that exhibition alive, because it's about, it's real people. When you put a narrative or storyline on the wall, it tends to become about who was the winner, who owns it, who has the permission to do that. Someone's burnt something, by the way.
I was going to say, I hope that's not the...
the toast. Someone's burnt the toast.
Fire alarm.
Yeah, I don't think so.
Well, where can people find out more information?
Go on to the website, docmediacentre.org, or to go on to the social media platforms, which is at docmediacentre. Have a look on there. Keep your eye out for the postcards or any of the media. And, you know, hopefully people are interested, maybe intrigued, to come along and find out more. And again, you know, I'm very interested in someone coming along and go, heard what you did, saw what you did, stumbled on what you did, someone mentioned what you did, can we have a conversation? And I'd much rather talk to someone and go, well, actually, it's not as complicated as you think it is. And in fact, we're here to help you to be able to make some sense of it, maybe. Where I think my final example is Paul Vernon with his Vortex Museum that he's developing. It's great because he said to me, John, I've got this collection of all this stuff, eclectic mix of, like, you know, Batman, wrestling, games, cards, and all sorts of badges. And he said to me, like, you know, blah, blah, blah. I said, okay, so have you packed it all in a box? Does it all look really nice and neat? Because that's what most people do with a collection, and they think about what other people will think about them. And he said, yeah. I said, well, bring it all along, yeah, and then just tip it on the table, yeah, and just get people to turn around and go, like, what? Oh, look at the connections there. Well, that's exactly what he does with his photos on the wall. And for me, it's about when you collect, you're constantly thinking about how you present it to the outside world. When you come to an Independent Heritage Network hosted Saturday Heritage Fair, it's about not how it looks, it's about what it's for. And what does it mean? What does it mean to you? What can others infer from what you've collected? You know what I mean? And then have conversations and dialogue. And I think when I look around and every single stallholder is talking to one or two people and they're completely animated and totally lost in it, you go, and that's it. And then you think, well, if there was too many people, you wouldn't be having that conversation. because the feedback you get from other heritage fairs, oh, it was packed, so I didn't get a chance to talk to everybody, which is bad. The people I really wanted to talk to, I couldn't talk to because I tried to talk to everybody, which was bad. So in fact, what you've got here is, how do you get that balance right between it's busy, but you had lots of good conversations? Because a lot of people want to move forward, and the people that come want to have a conversation about something. So it's a real balancing act. I'm not sure I've necessarily got it right, but I'm working hard to make that the right balance.
You've been listening to the Decentered Media podcast with me, Rob Watson. To find out more, go to decentered.co.uk or follow on Twitter and Instagram @decenteredmedia.